Time now for Fitzy and Mego with Nick Fitzy Stevens and Megan Ottolini on WEEI.
Like to watch? Just follow WEEI on Twitch.
We went to New York and they gave me the green light to play every day. And I was feeling comfortable. I was feeling good.
Ortiz, a big hulking lefty hitter, more of a line drive hitter, and the breaking ball's in for a strike.
He was still Ortiz in May, but I tell you what, by July, Poppy was his name.
And here's the 1-2, there's a fly ball to right field. Way back there, and there it goes, a home run, way back in the bleachers.
It was a bomb, all right? It was a monster bomb.
Nice little clip from The Comeback, all three episodes streaming now on Netflix, a documentary that, Mego, you and I agreed earlier on in the program. And by the way, if you happen to miss it, you can always subscribe to the Ken and Curtis podcast feed. Listen on WEI.com or just do like what all the cool kids are doing. Download the Odyssey app. You can use the rewind feature. Listen hour by hour, segment by segment at your leisure, especially if you're not within the confines of our signal reach at 93.7 FM or any one of our fabulous affiliates all throughout New England. Mego, this is a documentary that, like you said earlier, is not necessarily unearthing, you know, new artifacts and information, arcana that we never really knew about. There's some great candid interviews in the modern day with some of the idiots that made for the greatest comeback in baseball history and one of the seminal moments in all of Boston sports history. But something interesting that it did do was spurred quite a debate in your house. Can you tell me What was the genesis of the House Ottolini debate?
Sure. And I like that you call it House Ottolini because that sounds like it's all my last name. So in my house, we were watching The Comeback, and my husband, partway through, I think it was the second episode, because as I said earlier, we watched all three episodes straight in one evening. And he goes, "This is the best Boston sports story of all time." And I was like, I think Brady's a better story. I think overall Tom Brady is a better story than the 2004 Boston Red Sox. And he was like, "You're an idiot." And so I quietly put out a poll on Twitter that got more than 4,000 votes. I said, arguing with my husband, what's the greater Boston sports story? And he didn't like that because he said it was about better, like the best Boston sports story, not greater than, but whatever. Greater Boston sports story, I said 2004 Red Sox World Series or Tom Brady. And this sparked a lot of debate online. It was actually the most fun that I've had on Twitter in like 3 years, just watching people go insane, being so very, very adamant that their side was correct. It finished with 61% of respondents saying the 2004 Red Sox are the greater Boston sports story and 39% saying it's Tom Brady. And a couple of very, very annoying, actually, people in the comments saying, when did Tom Brady ever play football in Boston? To which I say, disrespectfully, leave the conversation because you don't get it.
Yeah, that's not what this is about. I saw some people in the mentions on that poll, and I couldn't believe what a great response you got to that as well. What were the final results, by the way, between what was the...
61% say it's the Red Sox in 2004, greatest Boston sports story. 39% say Tom Brady. I say Tom Brady, and I still feel very confident in that because Tom Brady, sixth round pick, I know he was a great college player at Michigan, but he was still sixth round pick. Guy that was your third stringer when he comes in, is on the bench a whole year, takes Drew Bledsoe getting injured, going to the hospital and a near-death experience to get out there, and then blossoms over 20 years into the greatest football player of all time. Greatest football player, greatest quarterback of all time. And
so it's not a Patriot. It's not what's a greater story, the comeback at large of the Red Sox team versus what Tom Brady was
and
able
again,
to do.
People go back and forth. Well, one is just one series. One is just about one team in one season. You can't compare that to 20 years. But then other people say, well, it's not just about that one season. It's about the 86 years before it and the curse and generational trauma of being a Red Sox fan. So I say, yes, then they actually are both decades long stories. Which one is better? I think if you ask anyone outside of Boston, they would say Brady. Brady's the better story. That's a very romantic story about the Red Sox, and it's nice, and it goes back to grandfathers and fathers and sons and going to the cemeteries after the World Series was won and putting Red Sox banners and flags out and how amazing that is. Yes, but I still think Brady is the better story.
Okay. You are speaking with somebody who named a child after Tom Brady. You are speaking to somebody whose goofball rantings and ravings on YouTube about my, you know, unfiltered man crush on Tom Brady 20 years ago, for better or worse, kind of kickstarted my media career. You're speaking to somebody who literally didn't miss a single Tom Brady game, would set his clock to and altered his calendar and life so as to make sure that I consumed everything Tom Brady. I have trouble sleeping sometimes at night because when he left, I was so hurt that I was critical of Brady and people thought that I turned into a Brady hater. I wish I handled all of that differently as well. And one of the legitimate thrills of my life was getting to play a part in Tom Brady night and host the red carpet pregame at the stadium, a stadium that was full of 60,000 people there, just to finally get a chance to say, thank you, Tom. We were so glad that you're forever a Patriot, even though now you're on Fox and a part owner of the Raiders. And that makes me kind of a little bit sick, but that's okay because he's living his best Tom Brady life. I got to tell you, Mego, I think the Red Sox are the greater story. And it's because when you mentioned somebody had said it was generational trauma, like Tom Brady is the ultimate. He is exactly what you're supposed to look to when you want to tell your kids hard work is the answer. When you want to tell your kids you can be whatever you want to be, you should never give up. There's every motivational poster, every slogan, every something you would ever want to say as a parent, as a teacher, as a coach, as a fan, all points back to Tom Brady. However, what those 2004 Red Sox did coming off of 2003 with only the weight of, I don't know, a century of heartbreak and failure and disappointment. And like you said, the generational trauma, you know, the running line used to be the Red Sox killed my father and now they're coming for me. The fact that like people lived whole, huge, long adult lifetimes, 80 years as Red Sox fans, and never saw them win a World Series. It's just almost unthinkable. And what those people, what that group of people did, coming from 3-0 down after losing in that heartbreaking fashion in 2003, only to turn around the next year and stage the greatest comeback, but with the weight of that century and all the Red Sox Nation's expectations, hopes, and dreams, and to do it against their oppressor on top of it all. They didn't come back against the Angels. They didn't come back against the Twins. They didn't come back against the Indians/Guardians. No, they can't, or the Orioles. They came back against the Yankees. It is so cathartic. It is so poetic. It's still to this day jaw-dropping. And Tom Brady, the single greatest athlete maybe in the history of the NFL, sports, North American sports, the Patriots, whatever, of course. But what those Red Sox did, I cast my vote there. It wasn't easy, but I cast my vote to the Sox.
What would you say if I said the Red Sox shouldn't have gone down 3-0 in the first place?
they probably shouldn't. Although,
look,
really
I just think
game three wasn't very close.
One was more in their control, and one was a story of a near outsider, like, rising to being the greatest sports figure of all time outside of maybe Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, I just think that one is a more impressive story than the other. And even now, I'm getting texts on the text line. This is what gets me to turn off your radio station. There's no way on God's green earth that she actually believes this. I 100% believe this. It's been an argument, and this is why I feel very strongly. It's like that stupid meme of, is the dress white and yellow, or is
it blue? Which way do you see it? Yeah, is it blue or is it white? Yeah.
Because somebody responded to me, this has now fully rolled over into an argument in my house between me and my wife, who rightly answered, that's so easy, then proceeded to announce the blatantly wrong answer.
Wait, to that texter and anyone else that's saying,
maybe it's
like,
a generational thing, Fitzy. Maybe if it's like, if you're born in the like mid 80s and later, you're gonna mm-hmm. say, of course it's Tom Brady. Tom Brady's the bigger one. And if you're mid 80s and earlier, you're gonna say, how could you say anything besides the 2004 Red Sox?
No, see, I
although my husband is younger than I am, so that doesn't really, I guess that doesn't
count.
But he's an old soul.
Okay, he's an old soul for sure. But somebody my age and people even around my age and maybe even a little bit older were around long enough to see the Patriots languish and be a laughingstock and be like team, like they were firmly team number four. Boston was not a football town really before. It started becoming a football town during the Bledsoe Parcells run. And that helped them rise in the ranks. And I think they overtook the Bruins and the Celtics weren't doing very well. So maybe they were the third favorite team, maybe even the second favorite team. But it was clearly a Red Sox town. And Tom Brady made New England, made Boston at large.
To quote our predecessor, you're making my point.
He did. He absolutely did. However, the spectacular nature of the comeback. And just how improbable it was. It's, you know, okay, yeah, sure, Tom Brady also staged the greatest comeback of all time. Why don't they do the comeback part two and they'll do Super Bowl 51? I guess in a lot of ways you probably could say that was just as unlikely. But the Falcons weren't the Yankees.
Right.
They were just a team in the way. Hold on. All right, so we got some calls coming in this now. Let's grab one call before we go to break.
Yeah, you tell me, because I know people like...
This is what arguments are for, Mego. I love these.
You know that I don't get on the radio and lie. Like, I feel this in my gut to the point that it's been an argument that we're still having in my house. And I guess my house is...
going to start a lot of arguments in other houses.
Walking around my house, I guess, is like doing a hacky sports radio bits. Because honestly, my house is like, no, this is... It's Brady. And then, like, people in our personal lives are like... Mego's the one who said it's the football side. Like, what is everybody okay in your house? Like,
do I need to do a wellness check?
How is your significant other the one who's arguing the baseball side? And then God bless the couple of respondents who say it's the Celtics.
That's even better. All right, Mattson, we'll grab one quick call before the break. Mattson, Westchester, calling in from New York, no less, from Yankee territory, but Red Sox Nation is global. Matt, what's up, buddy?
Good morning, everybody. How are we doing today?
Doing very well. Thanks. Good to have you.
Glad to be on. I'm calling to agree with Fitzy on this. It's the 04 Red Sox. And the reason I'm born and raised Red Sox fan, I'm only 28. I've seen him win four times. But my grandfather waited 80 years. And outside of the birth of my mother and her siblings and his marriage to my grandmother, God rest both my grandfather and my grandmother, so I think that was the greatest thing that ever happened to him. I'll never forget the fact that he went to her grave and said, "They did it, Dolly. They did it. They beat the Yankees. They won the World Series." I grew up 15 minutes from the Bronx. So being in the epicenter of that, you know what storm and those awful, insufferable fans, to have that happen and come back from four games to none and then at three games to none and then win the World Series was the greatest thing that's ever happened to, I think, my life, my mom's life, my grandfather's life. So it was just like a weight lifted off of everybody.
Yeah, it was. And you know, tomorrow, Matt, at Gillette Stadium, you know, they have that. Okay, thank you for the call, Matt. I appreciate it. And yeah, I immediately started welling up when he talked about his grandfather going to his grandmother's grave and said they did it, Dolly. Like, that's Mego.
Going
to college in New York City and living down there for a long time, I was in the middle of that same blank storm. I had people that used to tell me on the subway, like, take off that hat or else we'll take it off for you. I never experienced any sort of enmity like that the way that as a Pats fan. Later on, I did because, of course, the Giants, you know, somehow, whatever they did in those Super Bowls. And, you know, people loved hating on the Patriots because they were so good and they became the Yankees of football, blah, blah, blah. But I can relate to all that. And when it came down to game four of the World Series, I borrowed a car from a buddy and I drove back from New York City so I could be in Braintree and sit in the same living room that I watched so many cigarette smoke filled Red Sox games with my parents, just so I could be with them, so I could see the look on my dad's face, so I could be with my mom, who, you know, my mom wrote me in 1986 when the Sox lost the World Series to the Mets. My mom gave me a day off of school and then sent me to school a day later with an Epstein's mom note that said, "Dear Mrs. Foley, please excuse Nick from school yesterday. He was too sad about the Red Sox to go to school." Like, that, and I had a lot of kids missed it. Like, they get it. And yeah, tomorrow at Gillette Stadium, Adam Vinatieri returns to ring the bell in the lighthouse and be the keeper of the light. And people are going to get those incredible feels, the Gil Santos call of the 48-yard field goal to win the Super Bowl. It's an incredible story, but I just don't think anything will ever top what those Red Sox
did. But it's not the Vinatieri story. It's the Tom Brady story. I'm getting so many hateful texts about how I'm not from here, so I don't get it, which is totally fine. I've lived here for 14 years now, but I get it. Like, I'm not a native. I'm not from here. Okay. I do enjoy this one text. I'm the reverse of Belichick robbing the cradle. And that's very true. I like my younger man.
I wasn't expecting it to go there, but fair enough. That's what Saturday Radio does for you. 617-779-7937.
I'm proud.
We're a little bit late. I think it's a great, I love arguments where there's kind of no wrong answer and it's opinion based and you have to state your
case. A lot of the text line thinks there's a wrong answer and I have it, but that's fine. I've got 39% of respondents with me and I feel very strongly about this.
If you would like to jump in on that argument, go right ahead. We'll start another one when we come back. We're going to take a little bit of a sports break because coming up this Thursday is one of everyone's favorite days of the year. It's Halloween. Mego and I are going to tell you some of our we're going to do our favorite Halloween songs, scary movie recommendations, get into an absurd candy debate, and I'm sure that'll probably light the text line on fire, just like 04 Sox versus Brady did. But first, let's quickly catch up on everything else in the wild world of sports on a beautiful Saturday with a beautiful, beautiful man, Joe Braverman.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
I'll tell you what's not beautiful, Fitzy, is the injury report that's out for the Patriots as they get ready to welcome the Jets to town tomorrow. Receiver Jalen Polk has already been ruled out after not practicing this week due to a concussion. Guard Laydon Robinson has also been ruled out. He's dealing with an ankle issue. And notable names who are questionable, Daniel Iquale, Jonathan Jones, Vidarian Lowe, City So, and Keon White. For New York, starting guard Elijah Vera Tucker has been ruled out with an ankle injury, and starting right tackle Morgan Moses, questionable with a knee injury. Pats and Jets kick it off from Gillette tomorrow at 1 in the afternoon. Celtics look to move to 3-0 to start the season. They are in Detroit tonight to take on the Pistons. Team has already ruled out Sam Hauser for a second straight game. He's dealing with low back pain. Tip-off from the Motor City is scheduled for 7 o'clock. Meanwhile, the Bruins will try and break their 3-game losing streak tonight against the Maple Leafs. Puck drop from TD Garden set for 7 o'clock as well. Game 1 of the World Series goes to the Dodgers with a thrilling 6-3 win in 10 innings over the Yankees. Freddie Freeman hit the first ever walk-off grand slam in World Series history. Game 2 from Dodger Stadium is tonight. First pitch at 8:08. Carlos Rodon, Yoshinobu Yamamoto is the pitching matchup. Boston College football fell to Louisville last night 31-27. That makes it 3 straight losses for the Eagles after they were up 27-10 over the Cardinals midway through the third quarter. BC now sits at 4-4. They will welcome Syracuse to Alumni Stadium a week from today. Meanwhile, the slate of college football Saturday is included with number 21 Missouri visiting number 15 Alabama. You can listen to Westwood One's coverage of that game right here on 93.7 WEEI-FM beginning at 3 o'clock. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Mego, are you familiar with this song?
This is Donovan, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, you not only do you know the song, you nailed the artist.
Yeah, I know. I actually have like a pretty weird, deep music knowledge. I had one of those dads who drove around and was like, "Do you know who this is? Do you know who this is?" And he still does it, which is annoying because I'm like, "I showed you this."
Yeah, this is
also.
One of
are you in a car where the display tells you what the name of the song and the artist is?
I know. When I grew up, you used to have to, roll around on the dial and try to get the orange thing right on the song or the conversation. You never knew that. Nowadays, day and age, it'll read a text message to you when it tells you what the song is on the station, and your car is smarter than half the people in the house. That's one of my all time favorite songs.
And great song. I love
phenomenal.
That song too.
And Season of the Witch by Donovan. I highly recommend. There's some great covers as well. Lana Del Rey is a great one. But I particularly, like, for the week leading up to Halloween, listen to that song every day. And sometimes I'll just play it over and over again. I don't know why. It sticks with me. And it's funny how we have certain holidays that we remember and we celebrate with songs. Obviously, people immediately gravitate to Christmas and Christmas carols and holiday tunes and whatnot. Not a lot of Thanksgiving songs.
What's that Thanksgiving song that's like 18 minutes long? The Allison's Restaurant Massacre or something?
The 18-minute long Thanksgiving
song? You don't know this song? Oh my God, hold on.
From the person who thought Brady was a bigger story than the Red Sox, the 2004 Red Sox, comes the 18-minute Thanksgiving song.
Allison's Restaurant Massacre. You don't know that song by Arlo Guthrie?
I need to listen to it. Apparently.
Oh my God. It's a Thanksgiving song that's like 18 minutes long. And
at 18 minutes, it's, doesn't that teeter on overture or symphony?
Fitzy, I can't believe you don't know this song. It's like kind of a joke song. You would love it. Listen to it after we finish our show. No, okay. Oh my God, don't start it. It's so long.
All right, Arlo, all right, I'll make that note for analysis. All right. Anyway, so we know
it's
a lot of holidays.
It's from 1967. Really appealing right, to
perfect.
An extremely young audience with Donovan and Arlo Guthrie.
Also, the album cover has this man in a top hat with long hair and a napkin bib without a shirt on. So.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's how I like to picture most of our listeners on a Saturday morning. All right, so... Halloween kind of gets overlooked. Everyone always thinks costumes. They think scary movies. They think candy. Wanted to get into all that as well. But I love it when we were preparing for the show, you were like, oh, no, I love Halloween music. And I want to share like my favorite, like creepy, catchy, beloved Halloween song. So I would love to hear. Did you send some in to Joe?
Yes. Okay. So I have my top five, Fitzy, and right. I want you to weigh in on my okay. selections because I struggled
audience as
with
well.
Like one or two.
Okay.
And my top two were locks. And my okay. number five was a lock, but it doesn't totally get to count towards like the scary movie thing. I think it's just so iconic. And
I've got a one and a two that I feel like are undefeatable and immovable.
Okay.
So let's go.
Here's number five. Okay. Ghostbusters.
It's great. Great choice. Great choice. But Ghostbusters I can listen to any time of year because the movie is so great. The requels, the reboots recently, not so much. But the original one,
gotta be
phenomenal.
Honest.
Absolutely phenomenal. Don't. You're not
Why
missing
are the Ghostbusters girls now?
Yeah.
You know what happened? The Ghostbusters went woke. Now I'm rooting for the ghosts.
Okay, number four is a bit more of a classic. This is okay. I would say like an original slasher movie, maybe. Yeah.
Oh.
This is what I feel when every time that I open the Patriots injury reports about the offensive line.
The great Bernard Herrmann, who was the John Williams to Alfred Hitchcock with the theme to Psycho. Great call.
Yeah.
Again, I could listen to this any time of year because
listen to this any time of year?
Because it's great music. It's like it's great music.
I always think this would be a great bullpen song.
To great
run
choice.
Out to the like shrieking, you know, violins.
It's got to be a closer song though.
But like, I'm such a movie nerd.
Yeah,
I listen to movie music all year round.
Can't
so.
Be like coming in the fifth or sixth inning.
Okay,
with this.
I wonder if you'll know the
That's
next one.
That's what people used to hear when the Red Sox bullpen would open up.
The next one is kind of like a long intro, so I wonder if you'll be able to guess what it is, but I'll throw it in. This is one that I was
okay,
kind
so
of.
Number five, Ghostbusters. Number four, the theme to Psycho.
Yeah, okay, here's number three. Do you know what this is? It's like a slow burn. It really picks up.
What the hell is this?
I'll give you a clue.
Is this from Rosemary's Baby?
No, but I was watching some of Rosemary's Baby last night, and that one has the terrible music. That one's the music that's
it's
like...
It's a phenomenal movie, though.
It's like really annoying. This
what is,
this? Along the same lines, though. Devil Child.
What's it from?
Do you know it yet?
Is it The Omen?
The Omen!
Oh,
Damien.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what
yes,
I'm saying.
Yes, Damien, the Omen. Phenomenal movie. The original Omen is tremendous.
It has a slow intro, but then it gets going. Yeah.
Okay. So number three, theme to The Omen. Didn't see this one coming, but if I walked up to a house that was all dark and had a creepy dude out front with a bowl of candy, I'd be like, you know what? I'll just get two of the next one. Thanks, sir.
So any of these three, would they be on your top five list?
No.
Okay. I like that. So we're differentiating here.
Okay.
This next one has to. If it's not, I lose all respect for you. This is number two.
Theme to The Exorcist.
Yes.
Tubular Bells, I believe it's called.
Yeah, it's actually a little more like futuristic than I thought it was.
It doesn't scare me. Like the movie is terrifying.
This doesn't scare you?
No,
if you like walked into an empty house and this was playing, you'd be like, this is chill.
Yeah. I gotta stop walking into empty houses is the first thing I would think.
You're like, nothing scary about an old priest and a young priest standing under a streetlight ready to exorcise a young girl with the name of the president.
And you know what 2004 was? That was a real exorcism. I'll hang up and listen. Phenomenal Oh, shut up, Joe. Phenomenal movie. I'd be scarier if I heard that in the house. Phenomenal movie. Also, I'd like to recommend the book, The Exorcist. Incredible.
Okay, I haven't read the book.
Incredible read.
Also, a rare DC movie.
Yeah, it was too. The Steps at Georgetown. Do people visit the Steps at? Was it?
I'll tell you,
Georgetown.
So when I was at GW on the lacrosse team, we used to run the Exorcist Steps.
Oh, no way.
Which was scary because they're extremely steep. So they're in Georgetown. GW's right at the edge of Georgetown, the actual area of the city, not the school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Exorcist steps are. And they're very, very steep steps. So they're scary to run because you don't want to trip and fall like that priest. Spoiler alert.
Don't.
Okay. Here's the number one Halloween theme song.
Yes.
This is just greatest, like a... As the kids say, this is a bop. This song, like, you can actually, like...
Yo, this song slaps.
Yeah, it slaps. This song you could dance to in the club still. You could twerk. You could twerk to the Halloween song.
Okay, this is...
Prove it!
We should have started this debate. We should have started this debate in the 10 o'clock hour because we only have 20 minutes left and commercials. Maybe we can borrow a minute or two from Shime and Lions who are coming up. This is so
good.
This is so... First of all, you'll never speak to a bigger John Carpenter fan in the world. As a matter of fact,
I watched The Thing for the first time 2 weeks ago.
You did?
First time watching The Thing.
Okay, what did you, 1982 is The Thing. What did you think?
Nobody told me when I asked if this movie was worth watching. Nobody told me that there's a Siberian husky that's like a major plot point for the first 35 minutes.
Yeah,
like having a Siberian husky, my dog is like 50% of my personality. And nobody thought to tell me, yeah, there's like this evil Siberian husky plot point.
So what did you think overall of the movie?
I thought it was awesome.
It's it holds up so well. It is such a good movie.
We're so good. I'm not usually like a gore person, like gross out kind of movie person, but the whole setting in Antarctica, really, really cool. I think has aged super well. Practical effects were really fun to watch. And I love Kurt Russell. So it hit on all points, except for the dog stuff was kind of tough for me.
Sure.
But that's part of a scary movie. You're not supposed to feel comfortable.
That is easily my number one all-time Halloween theme song. Like, and I think that's number one on everyone's list. Music by John Carpenter. So on the John Carpenter front, tonight I'm going to a Halloween party. It's an adult costume party in the neighborhood. And my wife and I are going as Jack Burton and Gracie from Big Trouble in Little China. That's how big a John Carpenter
fan. Never seen it.
Oh, my God. The most absurd movie of all time. It'll make no sense to you, but it is one of the most joyful cinematic experiences I've had. I've rewatched it 24 times. It makes no sense, and it's one of my favorite movies ever. But that movie, Halloween, is, to me, the GOAT horror movie. I recently watched for the first time, Rob Zombie's remake from 2007. That wasn't it. Not a huge fan.
Okay.
Did not need the extra backstory. A buddy of mine who does my buddy Maddie, who does a horror and paranormal existence and movie podcast called P for Paranormal. His co-host said a great line. He said, can Hollywood please stop trying to explain Michael Myers to me? It just needs to be left alone.
Yeah,
he's just evil. That's it. There's no,
he's
I don't need a backstory
evil.
For why.
It's
just evil. That's it. What do you do with evil? Like, it's so hard to understand that it's that simple. And John Carpenter didn't like the remake and he wants it left alone and he wants it simplified. He was the horror master. That song is minimalistic genius and all of his scores that he did for his movies were so great. All right, I have one that I need to add. We don't have time to go too much deeper, but I got people always love to listen to Monster Mash, and they love some other Halloween-oriented songs. But this song, Joe, I think you have my number two all-timer.
Oh, this is Halloween?
Yes.
Yeah, this is a cute one. This movie really confused me as a little kid because I was always like, this came out when I was a kid. And I was like, is it a Halloween movie or a Christmas movie?
It's both.
I never knew when to watch it.
It's such a good movie. The stop motion animation is amazing. But this is also Danny Elfman, and I can listen to any Danny Elfman soundtrack anytime. And it's great. The kids love it. The adults love it.
Yeah, this is a good one.
This is
a good choice.
Yeah. And it's also a little more upbeat, so I like the scary elements to it, but, you know, it's a little foreboding, but at the same time, joyful, and it has a high sing-along factor. Real quick, what's the Megan Ottolini number one, when you were trick-or-treating and or now, I get to rob my kids' candies, and I get to cherry pick all, like, they don't want any of the Mounds or the Almond Joys or whatever, which I love.
Yeah, those are gross.
What?
I don't like almonds. I don't really like coconut that much in my chocolate. Mm-mm.
No?
No. Oh, are you going to ask me my number one candy?
Yeah.
When I was growing up, it was definitely Reese's. Like, I think everybody, it was Reese's.
Peanut butter cup? Yeah, okay.
But I love Twix, too. Mm, the best, if you ever come across it, and that, for some reason they don't make it in the mini size, is the Twix with peanut butter. Have you ever had a peanut butter Twix? That stuff's like crack.
You ever had the salted caramel Twix?
No.
Oh, it's hard to find. Does it? So good.
Like the Twix, I think, needs to go more the route of the Kit Kat, where you get into different flavors. Because
yeah, they have, though. They've got the salted caramel one. They've got the peanut butter one. There's a cookies and cream Twix.
I haven't tried that. But I tend to like cookies and cream.
Do you like the fact that M&Ms have kind of gone a little bit off the flavor rails as well? There's pumpkin spice, there's coconut.
Oh yeah. I got
crunchy.
Like birthday cake M&Ms.
How are those?
The issue is they were good. The peanut butter M&Ms, I can't allow myself to buy.
Why?
Eat the whole bag and I'll get sick.
So like, will I.
I can't control myself. I'm like a dog if you leave the food bag open. Like I will eat, I'm talking the shareable bag. Mm-hmm. I'll just like eat those and I'll just feel so sick I throw up.
All right, I knew this would happen. This is why I should have started the candy and Halloween song debate earlier, because I could just do this for another hour. However, we have to catch a break. We only have a couple minutes left. Bob and Needham, hang on. I want to make you our last caller. We will wrap things up and get you guys prepared for a trip into the wide world of Shimon Lions. They're going to be coming up from 12 to 3 here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Stay tuned. So this came in from the text line for beloved Halloween tunes, eh?
What is this?
This is a remix of Spooky Scary Skeletons.
What is Spooky Scary Skeletons from? Is that like one of the Disney specials or something? Do you remember? Okay, is this a fever dream, Fitzy?
Yes, the entire last 3 hours has been a fever dream.
Do you remember the Disney special that used to come on every year, and it was like all these really creepy cartoons from everywhere from like the 1930s to the 1980s, and it would have like Fantasia, but then it would also have like the dancing skeletons, and it would have everything in between. It was really legitimately scary.
Like creepy, like those disturbing images that sort of stick with you. Like, I wish my mind's eye could stop seeing this.
Yeah. And I, the only person I can really remember this with is my sister. And she's like, it was on Disney Channel every year.
No,
but everybody else I bring it to is like, didn't have satellite TV. You're a spoiled kid.
I remember is growing up in the area. I don't know if you had a similar type of station, but Channel 56 used to run this thing called Creature Double Feature with Uncle Dale on Saturdays, and a lot of times it would be monster movies, but sometimes you would get actual scary movies, or sometimes they would show them on Friday nights during the season with Dana Hersey on the Movie Loft. And though there were a couple of times growing up where it was like, oh cool, that movie about the about the puppet that comes to life well before Child's Play and Chucky, like, oh, it's Magic, the movie about the doll that comes to life and kills people. Great, now I'm not going to... I literally couldn't have a stuffed animal or a doll in my room for, like, growing up, because I saw, like, 10 seconds of that once by accident. Or, like, Phantasm with, like, just some of those movies. Then if I ever saw anything from, like, Halloween, never slept. I was such a scaredy little kid. I didn't start watching horror movies until the end of high school and college, once I went to NYU. And now I still watch them, but, like, I got to be honest, there are some scary movies I've been told I need to see, and I still can't make myself watch them.
Have you seen Barbarian?
I have not.
Oh, my God, Fitzy. Okay, you do have to watch that, because that's right up your alley, and it's the rare horror movie that's, like, between scary and legitimately funny. Like, legitimately will make you, like, bark laughing at certain points.
Okay, got to watch Barbarian. People keep telling me I need to watch Hereditary. And
oh, that's not funny. That's not a funny, scary movie. That's just a horrifying... That's the rare movie that I saw in theaters, and a third of the way through, I felt like I had made a big mistake by going to see it.
People have told me, like, oh, I still can't shake that movie.
Yeah, it's very unsettling.
Unsettling, okay, yeah. Blair Witch is worth a rewatch, by the way. I still think that really holds up.
Last 20 minutes are great.
Phenomenal. All right, last call on the show, and we'll take a little do a little crossover preview with John Lyons, who's in the house. Bob's in Needham. Bob, what do you got, buddy?
I just wanted to get back to Mago's poll. Mago, you realize you're asking us to choose which child we love best, and But when you mentioned you thought if people were born in the 80s or later, you know, they might have a different response to the poll, that I argue that all your old timers, they're not on taking that poll. They're not on Twitter. So,
oh, Bob dropped off.
Oh, there went Bob. Bob's grander point was the Red Sox, the 2004 Red Sox were more emotional than Brady, and that a larger portion of the audience,
I think people are saying Red Sox because they feel like they should say Red Sox. I think that they have like a guilt complex where they feel like they should honor that team so much.
Well, let's ask somebody who happens to be with us right now, who's a bit of an older soul, though a younger gentleman as well, and lives and dies with his Boston sports. John Lyons, part of the Lyons and Shime experience, coming up here on WEEI. Lyons, what is your response to Mego's very divisive, argumentative Twitter poll? What was more emotional? What was more significant? What's the greater story, Tom Brady's rise to dominance or the 2004 Red Sox?
Yeah, this one, Fitzy, was really difficult for me. Look, Brady's the bigger story internationally, but around here for Boston, living through 04, and look, full disclosure, I like the Patriots more than the Red Sox. I'm a fan of both, but
same.
I think it's that 04 Red Sox overcoming the Yankees the way they did. And especially, you put in context, the year before, you had a 5-2 lead in the eighth inning of Game 7 of the ALCS. You blow it. Aaron Boone hits the walk-off. You come back. You have the fight that July. You trade Nomar. You get down 0-3. You lose Game 3, 19-8. And then you come back and you win. And you beat the Cardinals. I mean, I was at Game 1 of that 0-4 World Series. And that was, I would say, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be at a lot of great games. That was probably the craziest environment I've ever been a part of.
That was the livest environment you've been at.
I would say, and I've been to Patriots playoff games, Celtics playoff games. I've been to two Bruins Stanley Cup games, and I would say game one of the '05. I went to the J.D. Drew Grand Slam game in the 07 ALCS, too, but that game one of 04 was just, that to me was the tops environment-wise. So, by the way, if you're looking for a good horror movie, Fitzy, 1 o'clock on CBS tomorrow.
Well played, John Lyons.
Thank you.
I'll be listening. I want to hear your guys' spin on the immaturity of the Patriots locker room, the dysfunction, which way Mayo went. What do you think, John, real quick, do you think there's any way that Gerard Mayo can pick a narrative in a direction and start properly developing a culture and a core on this team? And is it all just based around the success of Drake May?
Look, there is a way, and we'll get into it on the Lyons and Shime show, but it's not going to be easy, man. It's tough. It's tough. Well, he's kind of put himself in a bad spot, too, in part.
Ownership put them in a bad spot, and then Mayo has dug himself in a little deeper, and now it's help us, Drake May. You're our only hope. It's going to take time, but anything worth something in this life, John, as you full well know, takes hard work. As Tom Brady taught us, Mego, hard work is the answer. A great time with you as always, Miss Ottolini. Please give her a follow at Megan_Ottolini. I'm your old pal Nick Fitzy Stevens at Fitzy GFY. We'll be back with you Monday night from 6 to 7:30. Tomorrow, Megan will be on the WEI Football Morning Sunday Spectacular with Shime and Arcand, and I'll be with you on the Six Rings Post Game Show with Andy Hart live right after Jetropolitans at Patriots here on EEI. If you love the show, congratulate Joe. If you hate it, blame Braverman. Great job as always, Joe Braverman. Appreciate all the work you put into the show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay tuned. Coming up next, it's Lyons and Shime on WEEI.